You know, it wasn't a major thing, man. I just, something broke in me, and I just came all in. You know, that was the difference. I came all in. No more yeah buts. You know, no more I'll do this, but I won't do that, you know. And I just started working this deal as if my life depended on it, you know. And really, I believe it does today. I really do. And I'm so grateful for my sobriety and what AA has done for me. My life has completely changed, you know. Still drive fast and still listen to loud music and, you know. But I love life and sobriety. I found a life I can deal with this stuff without drinking one day at a time, thanks to this place and God. So that's all I got. Oh, that's it. It's speaker time. Who just arrived 2 minutes before 8, I'd like to let you know. Pam is our speaker tonight, and I just absolutely adore her and love her. And she works in my building, and every once in a while we cross paths, and it's so cool, you know, like to get a jolt to see someone from AA that you just love in the middle of your crazy workday. And, man, I've seen her walk through something, you know, tragedy, real, you know, not this stuff we come in here and whine about every day, you know, real stuff, you know, and she walked through it with sobriety, with grace, with dignity, you know, and she's just my hero, and I love her. And with that, I give you Pam.
Use the waterproof stuff either. Hi, Pam, alcoholic. Jeez. thanks. I guess I've been like agonizing over this thing because, like, I know you guys. Down here. You can't hear me? You can't hear me? I will be heard. because, you know, it's like I'm supposed to share what it was like. And what it's like now and all that good stuff. And I feel like y'all know my story. You've been listening to me for so many years that, you know what. Anyway, I was born and raised in Decatur, Illinois, the pride of the prairie, the soybean capital of the world. I never thought I'd ever eat a soybean until now I'm like addicted to edamame. I can't get enough of that stuff, and it's really good for you. I don't get it. I think it's because it's in my pores from living in that for 27 years, and it makes me feel going back home. I don't know. Anyway, that's I'm the baby out of 5 girls. I was born to Irish Catholic family. It's been an Irish Catholic family for generations and generations on both sides. It's just part of my blood. I can't get around it. It's who I am. Like I said, I was a baby out of 5 girls. My father was killed when I was 3 months old, and my oldest sister was 16. So my mother raised all 5 of us by herself. She held on to my father's wishes that we would have a good, fine Catholic education and go to the convent school where my grandmother went, and the grade school where my principal was my mother's first grade teacher. You know, it goes way back. And along with that comes some stubborn, willful, hard-headed stuff. And with my father dying, who was a good man, he didn't just die, he was killed. And my mother never remarried. She raised us girls, and there was always a part, and there still is to this day, a part in every one of us that has something missing. Something's missing. Even for each one of us girls, it's a different phase in our lives, a different aspect, because everybody was a different age, of course. When Daddy died, I was raised that I never got to have a father at the father-daughter dances. I was always jealous of the girls. I went to Catholic schools. People didn't get divorced. I was raised, you know, in the 60s, it wasn't popular for a single parent, a woman, to be raising all these children. But with the help of my mother's family, my father's family, they were a lot of drinkers, so we weren't around them very much. We were there Christmas Eve to watch them slurping oysters and drinking rum drinks in the kitchen, I don't know, and watching my uncle pass out on the couch, and it was all good. That was once a year. Once a year we were around the drinking, and that's the only time I ever heard my mother use the term alcoholic. She used it with her in-laws, so we weren't around them, and it made it easy because Daddy was gone, so there was no pressure there. Anyway, so I was the typical, you know, went to Catholic schools, and when I got old enough to get a hold of some liquor, boy, I got started, and I was just the party girl. I was too much fun. And by the time I met my first husband in a bar on my 18th birthday, when the drinking age wasn't until 19, but I already knew all the bartenders in town well enough that I could get free drinks by the time I was 18. I was getting them when I was 16. He was drinking orange juice in the bar because he didn't want to be like his father, and I was drinking Jack Daniels. And, you know, that's how it started, and that kept up until the Jack Daniels started making me puke blood. So I just went on to beer. I dropped the hard liquor then, for the most part, and went on to beer, and then for decades kept doing that. Let's see, I married that man, had two children. Then when we left Decatur and came here, and I thought the drugs and the alcohol would stay back there. You know, the alcohol I didn't worry about. It was the drugs. The drugs were illegal. They burn out your brain. I knew what they did to you. But alcohol, that was just a fact of life. What was alcohol? It was free. It was free a lot. yeah, it was. But it was legal. And you could get it at the 7-Eleven. And so we moved here, brought the kids here. And it was time when my daughter was 9 years old. And we were having a party. And going into the bathroom, doing the bumps so we could keep on drinking. And she cried and she said, "Mommy, I want you to quit doing that." She knew. And she came to Florida and got in school, and they started educating them about this stuff. You know, so you couldn't pull the wool over her eyes anymore. And she knew what was going on. She wasn't stupid. And so I said, okay, that was enough for me. And I told their dad, you know, look, we got to stop all this. We have children to raise. And he wasn't willing to stop. I had no problem with it. He wasn't willing to stop. So I got a divorce. So I quit doing the drugs. So my boyfriend that I happened to have at that time, he rescued me and taught me what it was all about to, if you're really sad or scared or anything like that, you get a drink. And you have a medium drink, and you take the liquor bottle and you pour out, and you say M-U-D-I-U-M, and then you put your Coke or whatever in there, and that's a medium drink. Yeah, and he taught me about that, and so we ended up, that was a fiasco, a drunken fiasco for off and on for about 3.5 years. I was married to that man and wore a lot of black eyes, gave a lot of black eyes, put my children through a lot of hell, divorced him, did not quit drinking. Kept on, you know, I did not see where alcohol was a problem. It was just a way of life. I had a good job. I raised my kids. It was just, you know, I had to relax. That life was tough, and I was, you know, only the strong survive, and it helps if you have a drink when you come home from work and relax, and then you can go to sleep. If you walk into walls on the way to the bed or get a black eye or dive into the bed and sometimes break your nose on the headboard and bleeds all over the place, at least you won't have a black eye in the next morning if it bleeds. If it doesn't bleed, then it swells up and you get the black eye. Shoulder hurts real bad still, too, you know? I remember during that marriage, that second marriage, my mother, one Easter for Christmas, sent me a card. And it had this really nice prayer on it. It had a picture of St. Francis on the front. You know, my mother, this is my mother who, when she was 18 years old, had her graduation party at a friend's house from school, and the father broke out a bottle of wine and said, "Does anybody want to celebrate?" And my mom's like, "I do." And she got drunk, got up the next morning. She tells this story. Got up the next morning, had really dry mouth, got a big old glass of ice water, and started getting the dry heaves, never drank wine again. Couldn't stand the smell of it, never drank it to this day. She's going to be 87. She won't touch wine. You know, she'd have an occasional beer in the house to make biscuits or if she couldn't go to sleep at night. She's not an alcoholic. She's a good, loving, stubborn, Scotch-Irish woman that, you know, she's my mother. She taught me what I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be a widow. I didn't want to raise my children without a father. I didn't want to hear that we didn't have enough money to do something. I remember taking a typing class in high school and screwing off and not caring and saying, I'm not going to be a secretary anyway. What the hell do I want to learn that for? Well, I tell you, it's good common sense to learn that kind of thing these days. But anyway, that, you know, I'm just bullheaded. I don't know what's good for me. I didn't listen to the nuns. I didn't listen to my mom. I didn't listen to my grandma when she told me one time rules were made to be broken. I like that one. I didn't listen. I did things my way. I was crazier than a bed bug. Not like I'm not now. But you mix a little alcohol with me and I'll go to not very good places. There's a lot of anger. Let's see. In the middle of the second marriage and after the second marriage, I was arrested twice for alcoholic behavior. Once was a watch this, and then I get a DUI 2 seconds later after I went through that red light. And then after that divorce, I hid that from everyone. I was really good at it because my family's up north in Illinois and I'm down here and I could hide. I could cover everything up. The kids don't even remember when I was in jail because for some reason, God had this, you know, one time I spent 4 days in jail. I already had a vacation planned for them to go stay with their father over Easter and I ended up in jail for 4 days, you know, go figure. They never had to know. I was really good at covering up. So I kept on drinking, and judges told me I need to come to AA. I came to AA. I parked my car with the 12-pack in it under a tree, and I go in for the little meeting, and I come back out, and even if it's 100 degrees outside, I swear you can reach inside that 12-pack, and there's a cold one after an hour. It's done enough to get you home to where the next cold one is. And I didn't listen to a darn thing anybody had to say. I remember going to a meeting on that side of town, and they had me right off the bat. I just walked in, I was scared to death, and I walked in, and they had me reading How It Works. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I'm reading War and Peace here to these people, and I didn't want it. I wasn't ready. And that, I went home, I lied on all those, everything, lied to probation officers, did whatever it took. I drove on, you know, you people that don't drive on suspended license, my hat is off to you because I drove for years on suspended license. I know all about SR-22s. I've had several. But I am here to tell you it does go away, and you get a good driving record after a while. It's amazing. They wouldn't give me one of those. I finally came in here. After beating myself up long enough, I knew the seed had been planted by the judges, by the therapists, by all these well-meaning people that tell me that I needed to do something I didn't want to do. And if I don't want to do something, I will dig my heels in really hard and not do it. But I finally came in here. Like Elizabeth said, under my own volition, nobody told me I had to be here. Although there was this really good-looking ponytailed attorney down the street, which I did have a real affinity for ponytailed attorneys. They were a lot of fun. we could party. So I found one right, you know, like a half a block down the street, and I lassoed him in. And little did I know he was sober, and he was a silver-tongued devil. He was in the right profession. He could talk a jury into anything, and he talked me into coming to AA. I thought, well, you know, this guy's pretty cool, and he doesn't drink. You know, maybe there might be some other cool people there. You know, maybe they're not all like me. Anyway, so I ended up coming to Central over at the house when the house was there, and I picked up a white chip on my son's 14th birthday, July 14th, 1997, Bastille Day. And I decided, you know, just like I have a tendency to do when I start something, I jump in with both feet, and I came here and I jumped in with both feet. I heard the promises and I believed those promises. I have been lied to for many years. But this time, for some reason, I believed the promises. I didn't believe I was being lied to. I trusted everybody when I walked in. And then I found out very quickly that, you know, some are sicker than others. Yeah, it happens around here. You know, we're not all saints. We're not all angels. It's progress, not perfection. But I kept growing through the program and all that good stuff. And then times got rough in my relationship, and I didn't feel that I could bring my problems here to meetings. There were certain things that I just didn't feel were open for public chewing on. So I once again went back to shrink, spent lots of money and lots of time seeing shrinks and taking antidepressants and doing this and doing that, and I made it through. I did all right, and then and then that attorney got himself in some trouble, and it was plastered all over Channel 13. And every 10 minutes, you know. So he was able to go and get help for the problems that he had. And I wish to be. I didn't walk away from another relationship. I stayed in that relationship because I loved that man, and I'd walked away from two other marriages, and I'd have enough of this stuff under my belt. I'd learned that it's better to give than to receive, and times get rough. We just don't walk out. I don't go pick up a drink. I don't go abandon the whole. I got to stay in there. And I did, and I'm grateful that I did. There's, Mark, my husband, he wasn't my husband at that time. It took him like 7 years before he, when we first started dating, my mother was like, so he's 40 years old and he's never been married and he has no children. What's wrong with him? I go, oh, well, we won't go into that, Mom, but he's a really nice guy. He's a really good person. And so he ended up going over to treatment in Tampa because he was an attorney, and the Florida Bar Association does demand certain responsibilities out of their attorneys so they can keep their license, because they're, you know, I believe, and I have seen, it's been my experience, that alcoholics are real driven kind of people. You know, just like I start something and I put both feet into it and I go at it like a juggernaut. You know, I'm a maniac. And therefore, a lot of people in this program, I find, go into some pretty stressful professions because they like that adrenaline rush, that whatever, you know. So happens a lot. Happens a lot around here. If you're gifted to have enough brain to pull it off, God bless you. Don't blow up. Don't spontaneous combust, because that's a lot of inertia going on. So anyway, he went into a 90-day program. Everything was public. 90-day program. Got out of the 90-day program. Clean, sober, happy. Everything was going well. And we finally got engaged. I got a piece of the rock. And we got married, and life was wonderful. All my family came down. We had this small but happy wedding, and everything was perfect, absolutely perfect. And that lasted for 5.5 months. And the day before my belly button birthday, we were supposed to go to Fort Lauderdale to see the Stones, because we saw the Stones every time they came to Florida. I have seen Mick Jagger so many times, I really don't care if I ever see him again. Keith Richards is really cool, but Mick Jagger I could do without. I like the fishing lures in the hair, something about it, I don't know. I can't, another ponytail thing, I don't know. I'm really not into it anymore. I'm old, but I don't know. Woke up, let's see, Saturday, got up and let Mark sleep in because we were going to a Magic game that night and then going to leave straight from the Magic game to go to Fort Lauderdale to stay in a fancy pants hotel and have a birthday weekend. And little afternoon, a neighbor came over and we'd been visiting and stuff, and a little afternoon I went in to go in and take a shower. But I went to check on Mark before I went in to take a shower, and I shook him. You know, honey, you getting up? Or, you know, what are you doing? Are you gonna? And he didn't move. And I rolled him over, and there was no life there. His eyes were shut, but I could. It was just like I've seen dogs dead before. It's the closest I've ever. You know, and there's just something about the eyes. And I called 911, and they had me pull him off the bed onto the floor because it has to be a solid surface, and I had to start doing CPR. I hadn't done CPR except for on this little blow-up thing, Annie. I don't think she's but her heart moves up. Yeah. When I was a Girl Scout, you know, they had Annie. Everybody always had Annie. And that was the only time I'd ever done anything like that. And I'm freaking out. I am bawling. I am slapping him. I am doing everything in my power. If love could have brought that man back alive, he wasn't dead now at that time. He was only mostly dead. And if anybody's seen The Princess Bride, I keep thinking about that. He's only mostly dead. By the time the paramedics got there, they took over and worked on him at the house, and then they put him in the ambulance, and they took him to the hospital. And I'm just like, oh, well, I have to take a shower before I get to the hospital. You know, I haven't even showered yet. You people don't. And they're like, no, you better hurry. And my neighbor was there, and she took me, drove me over. It's just only a few blocks to the hospital. And we got there, and they had a cop there sitting with me. I don't know what they thought I was going to do. But that's what they did this time. And he was very nice. And my neighbor sat with me in the little closed-in room in the emergency room. They have a glassed-in one for people that go hysterical, I guess. They're anticipating this kind of thing. And they worked on him, and they worked on him. And then I went out to smoke a cigarette, and I came back in, and the doctor's standing there with his scrubs on, and he looks at me, and I just looked at him. I said, my husband's dead, isn't he? And he nodded. And now I'm really finally like my mom. You know? Got the big W I can wear. Got the But I knew, I had to call my in-laws and tell them that their son was dead. They're in South Carolina. And I don't remember any more of that Saturday. I don't remember a bit of it. All I knew was that I needed to be at a meeting. I needed to be with you people. Because that's where the love is. The love is right here in this room. And this is where I feel safe. I can always feel safe if I come here. And so the next morning was a Sunday morning meeting. I love the Sunday morning 10 o'clock meeting. Mark and I always went to the 10 o'clock meeting on Sunday morning. And I remember sitting against the wall where I always sit, and Reese McCain sitting right over there. And they, at the beginning of the meeting, they asked if anybody wanted to drink, and I had to raise my hand finally. And I had to tell everybody, and what I do remember what I said. I said, when I first came in here, when I first came into AA, I was a barstool sitting slut, divorcee. Today, to the best of my ability, I wish to be a sane widowed lady, like my husband would appreciate, and the one that my husband married. So I always put on the best face for him, do the best I could. And then I sat through the meeting, and I don't remember too much more of that, except crying a lot. And I knew that I had to clean my house because my in-laws were coming. It was another. I had to come to a meeting, and I had to get my house clean because my mother-in-law's coming, and I can't let her have to see the dog hair all over the house. And, we lived in that little place. And, okay, I'm sorry. And so I left here, and I had a really cool, my husband had bought me a fairly new, fancy white BMW, and I got in it, and I pulled out of here, and I went around the block like I always do and come out on Highland, and I'm sitting at the light, and Tina, where's Tina? I guess she's not here. Tina was behind me at the light, and it light turned green. I took my foot off the brake, pushed in the clutch, put the car in gear, proceed across the street, and bam! A landscaping pickup truck runs the light and just totals my car, creams it. And I'm like, airbags go off, the whole shooting match, And I looked up, and I knew better than to say why, ask why. I don't ask God why for anything. It's none of my business why. If God wanted me to know why, I'd know. And obviously, He's keeping that one a secret right now. I feel bad for the guy driving the other car because he tried to lie and say I jumped the light, and he had like 20 alcoholics sitting on the sidewalk that had been in the meeting. One lawyer, a couple people in law school, it's like, buddy, I'm sorry. But that ain't working. Poor guy. So anyway, I ended up going home and sitting down and shutting up just like God wanted me to do. And that's what it takes for Pam sometimes, to sit down and shut up is like a ton of bricks thrown at her all at once. So I don't stop very often. But I have learned over the last couple of years the power of a nap. Naps are wonderful things because it keeps me grounded. It's funny. I asked my mom a few months ago, or a little while back. I've always been so concerned about what we eat. Even though I smoke like a fiend and I drink plenty of coffee, I guess it's kind of like the cocaine and the beer thing. I don't know. I worry about nutrition. I worry about being healthy. I worry about my sisters and my brother-in-laws and their health. And my husband's the one that dies of natural causes. The natural causes that he died of in the hospital, they asked me, they said, was he an alcoholic? I'm like, but he hasn't drank in, 10 years. God knows how, And it was damage that was done during his drinking age when he was younger, and those things don't heal. My husband died of an esophageal tear. He bled out in his sleep. His esophagus went. And I know that he was a huge, at one point, he was a huge bourbon drinker. And we always laughed and called him Maximum Mark because everything he did, he went full out. We were all just, you know, we were this full out thing. And he and that's what killed him, was drinking that he did in college, because he was sober in law school, and it just ate at him. Everything else that we do to our bodies, you know, it ate, and that's what killed him. It was an alcohol-related death, but he hadn't drank in God knows how many years. And I have heard so many other people in this program that have intestinal or digestive system problems because of the way the alcohol eats up our insides, and we don't even know. So go to the doctor. have them check it out. I know what it's like to do the wrong thing. I've done the wrong thing all my life. If there's a wrong choice to make, I'll make it. But thank God, because now in this position that I'm in my life right now, I know what choices not to make. I know that my higher power that I have learned to love through this program will carry me through anything. And my higher power works through so many of you people that I know and I love and have helped me through the last 2 years, keeping an eye on me, telling me they're keeping an eye on me, and just, you know, it's the love and the power of the love and the people in this room, and that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about for me. And I know the people that's where, you know, that's where you're coming from. We know this when we see each other. We've known this all our lives, I think. It's my opinion, because I'm sitting up here and I got the microphone and I can give my opinion. I don't think we're here by accident. I don't believe in accidents. I don't believe in coincidences. And I'm grateful for it. And I have 4 beautiful grandchildren now, that it seems as though this disease does go every other generation in my family. We have a tendency to spoil those little shits. And I want this place to be around for them. I mean it with all my heart, because this place has so saved my life. And my family, so, I have 2 sisters that are dying of this disease because they're bullheaded. And, you know, I know people that have recovered or are in recovery of their disease without AA. And I know it's possible that it works, but for me, this is what it took for me. I know that, you know, it says right on the front there, the how is honesty, open-minded, and willingness. And there's a lot of times, even to this day, I got to pray for the willingness to be willing. But I am willing, and I don't want, I see my 2 sisters just disintegrating. And when the other 2 call me and say, Pam, please don't drink. Please don't do that. I'm like, don't worry. To the best of my ability, I will stay sober. I have too much to lose. And my life has gotten harder since I've been sober. My life's gotten a lot harder. I care more. I have a lot more responsibilities. But I am so grateful for the things that I do have. And the friends and the love that I have here. I don't want to lose you guys. If I go out and get drunk, it'd be like, see ya. You know, you're all full of shit. And that's not true. I know that's not true. That's all I got, man. I just keep coming back.
Thank you, Pam, so much.